Well, the last time we spoke to you, there were a lot of teams alive, and now there are but 16 teams with a chance to put their hands around Lord Stanley's Cup. Feel it for all it's worth. Just so get right in there. Dig right in there.
Are we doing autopsy day or preview day or look ahead or look behind?
What all of it.
Today? Okay.
For the first time, present my playoff picks for the first round today on the show. I have to do them. I am cursed with being considered a pundit. And to that end, I have to make my picks earlier than I'd like to, as opposed to Merrick, who wouldn't want to make picks anyway because
just the host. Just no one cares what I think. No one cares what I think.
But I had to make my picks last night. I made them between the hours of 2 and 3 in the morning after what I felt was an exemplary episode of Mad Men, but a lot of people were down on it. And then I also had an old-fashioned during it, and I sat down and I really pondered. I said, Greg, who do you believe is going to win in the first round of these playoffs? And then I made my picks, and then I threw it away, and then I made more picks. Threw that away. Made a few more picks, threw that away, and finally settled on a collection of picks that I feel are definitely not going to come to fruition.
Now, hang on a second. When you make your old fashions, do you put like Angostura bitters in them and everything? Like, do you really go for it? Oh, you do.
The only thing that we use Makers because we both like when the bartender makes old fashions with Makers. But we also have Four Roses, too, if needs be. But we use the bitters, and then we also use the oil of an orange peel to really kind of, you know, make it pop, throw the orange peel in. I've seen people that will light the orange peel aflame. We're not quite there yet.
Gimmicky.
But we kick back with a couple of old fashions during the Mad Men.
Really getting cube involved here?
No sugar cube, but we do use the giant spherical ice cube. To really get the thing rolling.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Move along to your picks now.
Thirsty, Jeffy.
Yeah, I got my schedule for the Stanley Cup playoffs yesterday. I am very thirsty and will have no time to drink. But anyhow, soldier on.
For the people that like to come find you, though, what series are you focusing on in the first round?
It's not an individual series. I'm doing updates throughout. It's pretty much 7 days a week into a lot of our news programs and then doing a lot of relief for radio. So it'll be a lot of Hockey Centrals. That is the plan so far. But who knows what the rest of the playoffs will bring. And then covering all the junior we're still doing in Memorial Cup and all that shiz.
Look, we're going to have plenty of playoff shit coming up later. But maybe you're right and we do a little post-mortem first. Let's begin with the two teams that have already made coaching changes and one that made a GM change. Were you at all surprised that Nonis was spiked within 24 hours of the team?
I kind of thought they might do it on getaway day, but I guess this was inevitable, and why delay it? So just do it on the Sunday, Bloody Sunday, and start having heads roll all over the stage. So no, not shocked. I think we've all known all season long there was going to be scalpings. Like, it was going to be bad, and there was going to be a lot of people out of their job. I didn't know that pretty much the entire scouting staff was going to get chopped. I thought a large amount of them we're going to go the way of the dodo bird, but I didn't know that many would. But Shanahan, you go back to the news earlier this year about the scorched earth policy, and he is indeed scorching the earth. So, surprise? No, not at all.
Couple things straight away. One of the best or worst things to happen to the Leafs this year was that the Los Angeles Kings missed the playoffs. Now, I say this because it all depends on whether or not you think Rob Blake would be a really good general manager for Toronto.
I don't
because
think he'd
from what
leave.
I can gather,
I don't
what
know
I can gather,
to, I don't know if he'd want to leave
well,
where
no,
he lives.
It's, I heard it's not a matter of want. I heard it's a matter of the Kings wanting to keep their management team together through adversity, and they have adversity now.
Oh yes,
and I heard that they don't. That even if Blake kind of gave his indication that he'd like to explore that possibility, they might not let him go at this point.
Is that right?
Not
eh?
Doing anybody any favors. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Well, then what about Mike Fiuta?
Fiuta is a different kind of deal. That's a possibility, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Blake, for whatever reason, I don't think that they want to let him go.
Because
and I also don't.
Because they just lost Hextall and he's still too young?
They just lost Hextall, yeah. And I also think that in the case of Blake, you just don't know. If the Leafs job's so weird, right? Like, it's a...
You think?
It's a power... But it's clearly a power structure. Like, clearly whoever comes in is going to have to work with Dubas and Hunter, right?
Yep.
That much is clear. Yeah. But the question is like, do you bring in someone that's an experienced, like Blake, to run your GM spot, although he was the GM of Team Canada, or do you bring in somebody who's got NHL experience to take that job?
First of all, they will not only have to work with Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas, but they'll also have to work with Brendan Shanahan, who, by the way, has no boss. Tim Leiwicki is leaving, so that adds another wrinkle into this entire sordid picture. So right now Shanahan has no boss. There'll be someone new coming in. Does an experienced general manager want to come in and work with Brendan Shanahan? Because make no mistake about it, this is all being controlled by Brendan Shanahan. And you can even make the arguments the moves this year all had to be cleared by Brendan Shanahan, which is why, and I think he's right, Kiprios put forward the idea today that the best general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs is Brendan Shanahan. Because he's already doing it. Mm-hmm. Does he want to have that GM president portfolio? Probably not. But anyone coming in has to know that there are people he will have to work with.
Yeah, and thing about Shanny, though, is that like that was his calling card. His calling card was coalition building, remember? When he got hired, it wasn't because he was ever ran an organization before or ran anything before. I think he's run a half marathon. That's about it. But his thing was like, oh, I built this whole thing in the Department of Player Safety.
I built teams. Yeah.
I'm a team builder. So that should be not a problem for him to find somebody who can play well with others.
There's one person I always gets left out here, and I really shouldn't, considering he's a Stouffville native as well. Brandon Pridham, as well, as part of that group that he'll have to work with.
I want to say two things about Dave Notice. First of all, I find he inherited a bad roster, but he helped build a bad roster. So I can't generate much sympathy for him. I don't think he did very good things for this team. I think that he successfully turned a bubble team that Brian Burke built and made it a sub-bubble team that was only salvaged by an incredible run by a young goaltender one year. He'll find another place to thrive. He's going to do the Scott Housen thing and disappear into some assistant GM role somewhere else, I'm sure. I will say this, though, about the person who carried more water for him than most rivers and tributaries do in the course of a calendar year, and that'd be Darren Drager. Now, I've had some conversations with Dregs off the record about all this Nona stuff, and we agree to disagree about his coverage, but I want to say this about him. I like Drager, and I think that he's a good reporter, and I think that he gets scoops, and I think he could do really good work. And I think the single greatest thing that could happen for him right now is for Dave Notice to no longer work for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because this shit has hurt his career in ways that he cannot fathom. I mean, it's not just fan perception, viewer perception. It's peer perception. It's everything. Merrick, his stock has dropped as an insider precipitously since the lockout. But a lot having to do with the idea that whenever he opened his mouth, he was speaking on behalf of someone else or speaking to protect someone else. Now, he's going to tell you it ain't the case, and maybe it ain't the case. Maybe the relationship between him and Nonis is completely not what we expect it to be or think it to be. But the bottom line is that perception is what it is. And for Nonis to no longer be there, I think we can go back to concentrating on Darren Drager being a really, really good insider in this business and a guy who can cover the Leafs without any bias or any agenda. And I think that's a good thing. So I think that the best thing to happen for Darren Drager is Dave Notice no longer be anywhere near the Toronto Maple Leafs.
How is it different, though, from someone, any other reporter, not having a relationship by way of family, but a relationship by way of friendship, reporting on that player? Because that does happen. There was a significant writer with the Hockey News once upon a time who was best buddies with Chris Pronger. Chris Pronger, former Peterborough Pete, this right, you can extrapolate who I'm talking about here, used to cover the Petes in Peterborough, became good friends with him, covered him through the NHL, would always, you know, trumpet him for the Norris Trophy, pick the Anaheim Ducks to win Stanley Cups while he was there. How is that any different?
I think it's different for one primary reason, which is the position of the person that we assumed he is carrying water for. Because it doesn't become friendly coverage of a player or covering a player's ass when he gets called out or if he makes a bad play or whatever. It becomes parroting the message for a team to its fan base or trying to play devil's advocate, being the Iraqi director of communications guy saying the infidels are not storming the city. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was always my thing with Darren, was that it was always this. And again, it wouldn't be a situation for any of us if it wasn't for the fact that when we read Hope Smoke's indispensable friggin' Twitter feed covering all of these nonsensical interviews that people give in the Toronto media, if it wasn't for every couple of days reading something that Dreger said about Nonis or about the Leafs that just made you say, oh, come on, what is he reading off, bullet points? If it wasn't for that, then there wouldn't be an issue. And I think it's because we're talking about not only just a guy that we assumed he was covering for, but also being that sort of devil's advocate with a really big platform for the team. And I know that didn't sit well with Leafs fans, and I know that didn't sit well with a lot of people that are in the business that respect Darren in a lot of other ways, but looked at what he said and did with regard to the Leafs and said, Where is the disconnect here? You obviously are doing something here agenda driven, because the things that you are saying and doing do not jibe with reality. So I think maybe if it is just Darren believing what he believed about the Leafs, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. I think it would be impossible for any of us to believe that to be the case as long as Dave Nonis was the GM. Now he's gone, and now we can go back to looking at Dreger as maybe having a clean slate here.
One thing, though, to keep in mind as well, he is put in that position by someone above him. Right, he doesn't choose the Leafs beat.
No, that's a real fair point. That's a really fair point.
Like in Darren's defense and all this, that is not something he just doesn't walk in and say, "Here's what I'm gonna do." No, it's not the way it works.
Yeah. Patrick M. So you're saying Nonis did to Toronto exactly what he did in Vancouver after Burke emptied the coffers?
Well, the problem, one of the problems with David, and it's tough, man. Is in a lot of ways he doubled down on questionable moves that Brian Burke made, and the two big ones being the extension for Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel. Now, here's the thing you ask yourself. Okay, do you want to be, because it's going to be one of two things. Do you want to be the general manager who overpaid for the player, or do you want to be the general manager that let the player get away?
Now correct me if I'm wrong, though. Wasn't the Phaneuf extension Nonis? Wasn't that during his watch?
That's what I'm saying. The extension for Kessel and for Phaneuf.
Doubled down with that. Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, do you want to be the general manager that lets them walk for nothing, or do you want to be the general manager that overpays them? Because one of two things was going to happen in Toronto. That's the dilemma facing Dave Nonis. Does he want to? Listen, I don't think for a second Dave Nonis wanted that ticket for those players. Not a chance. But what's the option? Because you never want to be the GM that lets someone, especially a defenseman, go. What happens to those GMs? They don't work very long in the NHL. You don't want that on the resume.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. Like, I know it's quick and easy to point out the flaws of Dave Nonis, but I think for a second you need to think of the skin that he was in and the decisions that he was faced with.
That's fair.
Did he handle the cap well? Probably not. No one of the Maple Leafs has handled the cap well. Mm-hmm. Back when the cap was first brought in 2005. So,
but he does deserve some. Dave. He does deserve some Glenn Sather Award for his ability to get rid of his own toxic contract. That's the special Glenn Sather trophy that we hand out every year for the GM who is best able to make his own toxic contract disappear. Yeah. So, name for Glenn
Sather. He did. Yeah, that's true.
It's the Ryan McDonough Memorial. Anyways,
Scott Gomez, what?
Do you think Ted Nolan gets another job in North America?
If you're a team, okay, let me ask you this. If you're a team that's going through a rebuild, maybe a scorched earth rebuild, maybe a team that's going to take a long time, I would say as many as 400 games until you're back to credibility in the NHL. Would you not at least perhaps look at a rah-rah versus a systems coach like Ted Nolan?
Are you saying why didn't the Sabres keep him?
No, I'm saying why didn't the Leafs hire him?
Interesting thought. It's a very interesting thought.
Listen, Ted Nolan is back on the landscape. I don't think anyone thinks that this was necessarily a justifiable firing, even though we knew it was going to happen all season long, Greg. And we talked about it all season long to the point that, you know, we've pretty much named his successor in Luke Richardson. So I don't think anyone thinks that Ted Nolan deserves to hang for the Buffalo Sabres being in 30th place.
No.
When it was a team constructed to finish in 30th place. You had broadcasters. I remember Greg Millen, one of the lines of the year. It's the Buffalo Sabres game, and Anders Lindback made, I think it was Lindback, made a big save. And Millsy hit the great line, said, well, that won't make management happy. It was just a great line that you never hear from a color guy in the booth. But like that was the extent of how this was like the worst kept secret in the NHL, how this team was constructed to fail. And Ted ended up walking the plank for it.
Hmm. Has he mended his reputation enough to get another job in North America?
Great question. You'll have to ask 30 general managers and presidents. I don't know. I know that his work with the Latvian team went a long way to saying, hey, you know what? Ted Nolan can actually do something, because with that ragtag group, they really gave Team Canada a scare and were one shot away from doing the unthinkable. And sure, Gudlevskis was playing out of his mind and could barely stand up for the post-game interview in the scrums. But still, like, I don't know. It's, man, when you're a 30th place coach, it's tough. Like, just ask Peter Horacek what it's like just looking at your career prospects down the line after you've had to mentor over this nightmare. Yeah. It's not good.
It'll be interesting. I hope he doesn't have to go all the way back to Latvia for his next job, but it'll be interesting to see where he ends up.
But he's a hero. He's a hero there. He's
yeah,
a hero
I know
there.
That.
It's a great culture and great fans.
He played the good soldier all year, and I'm so super happy that it didn't become an ugly situation. He did his best, and it could have gotten ugly. It could have been a real damn the man situation. It could have been, you know, double guns at the at management all season long by Ted Nolan, but it wasn't. So I think his best behavior may mean that he eventually gets another gig. What do you make, though, sir, of this scenario?
Okay.
Terry Pegula finds a way to make money by extracting natural gas out of the earth. He takes that money. Mm-hmm. He puts it in a box. He puts a bow around it. He sends it to Michael W. Babcock and says, mm-hmm. Sir, I have all the money in the world and a nice, shiny new Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. Pleased to be coaching my team. What
Theories
say
out
you,
there.
Mike Babcock?
Theories out there. What's the number here that we're talking about, Mr. Terry Pegula?
Is $4 million the number for Babcock right now?
I think so. Everybody's at three, and he's going to jump everybody at four. It is interesting. I mean, listen, a lot of people are going to hitch their wagon to Connor McDavid. You watch, he'll act as a magnet for free agents. Who think they can lengthen their career, and rightfully so, by playing with them. So there is something telling, but something in the back of my mind still, I'm still convinced that Babcock wants to see what goes down in Pittsburgh before he makes any decisions. Don't you? Don't you get that feeling?
It wouldn't surprise me.
And in Pittsburgh, if it is a cleaning of the slate, you'd have the opportunity suited probably for player personnel decisions as well, not unlike what Patrick Waugh has with Colorado. Would he get that in Buffalo?
But the only thing is what's the connection in Pittsburgh? I mean, is he a huge liberal? Does he know Ron Burkle? Because with Tim Murray, you know, they go back to Anaheim days.
Absolutely.
He's got the connection there. And it's all about the connections in this stupid league of nepotism that we all play in.
Oh, Greg, it's the world of nepotism. It's not exclusive to the NHL. Come on, let's not pretend that this only exists in the National Hockey League. Well, there is a guy by the name of Sidney Crosby, who he coached twice, once in Vancouver and once in Sochi. So if you're looking for a connection, there it is.
You might remember Sid did a good job with that again in the past back in 2010.
And then the goal that should have been made into a postage stamp in the game against Sweden in Sochi. We should all forget about Forsberg on Hirsch. We should think about Crosby on Lundqvist.
Good player, good guy, good in the room. Don't need him to score every game. Big roster, lots of people on it. It's not just a one-man team. It's a team.
I think it's a possibility. But, I mean, how well does Mike Johnston have to do to protect his job? Or is his job completely unprotected if Mike Babcock breaks free of Detroit?
I think you got to get to the conference final.
Holy shit, really?
Yep. Well, you think it's like, oh, we won a round and now everything's okay?
I don't know. Conference final is pretty heavy lifting, though, don't you think?
Yeah, it's two rounds.
You got to beat the Rangers and either the Caps or the Islanders.
Why is the bar that low in Pittsburgh now all of a sudden? Let's get this guy. He's standing by.
Joining us now, a very learned man who's going to spread some wisdom on these podcast airwaves and try to educate these two knuckleheads. Scott Morrison joins us here from Sportsnet. Scotty, we were just talking about Mike Johnston and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you believe, as Jeff Merrick believes, that if he doesn't make the conference final, he would be out of a job if Mike Babcock was available?
I don't entirely disagree. I think a lot of it would be based on how well the team plays in the postseason. But, yeah, I could see that the bar is probably a couple of rounds of success if there was a Babcock waiting in the wings with an interest to go there.
You know, we were just talking, Scotty, about the Maple Leafs, and Maple Leaf conversations usually lead to the guy behind the bench in Detroit, and then that's where we got on the idea of the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. Do you have a gut feeling of where Babcock is at? Not necessarily where he'll land, but where his mind is at away from the Detroit Red Wings right now?
I think there's probably a bunch of different scenarios that can come into play here. I mean, some people look and say, okay, if there was a job that involved being able to coach a Sidney Crosby, because everybody knows the respect and the success those two have had together internationally, that's one particular angle. Where does Connor McDavid go? Is that a situation that he might want to walk into? Is it a situation where, as a coach, he also has input into player personnel, kind of the NFL model, if you will. Or is it just all about the money? So where is his head in any of those scenarios, I guess, is kind of would dictate where he would be thinking about landing if, in fact, he is going to leave the Red Wings situation. And a lot of that decision-making with respect to Detroit is predicated on where that team is in its development. And, you know, he's been candid that he didn't think it was a very good team back in July, but has been impressed with how they've come along, especially their younger players this season. So I think there's a bunch of different things that could be moving around in his head and waiting to see just what openings are out there and what situations develop. I mean, you've got everybody links him to Toronto because they have nothing but money. But I think it's more than that for Mike. And what kind of structure does Brendan Shanahan put in place now that he's moved out to Dave Nonis and a bunch of the staff there? I mean, and he's talked about he's keeping the front office the way it's been restructured as of the bloodletting yesterday of Black Sunday, and that he wants a guy to come in who is willing to work with the people who are there. And I appreciate that. And share the vision that Brendan has is that he's got a good staff there. So there's so many different factors that could come into play for Mike or anybody in this case, looking at a Toronto scenario.
Yeah. He's kind of like the Bill Parcells of hockey. Like an amazingly successful coach, who has the golden touch and also has little assistant coaches that filter out through the league. You know, your McClellans and your Peterses and your McLeans and stuff. It's a fascinating guy. I'm very intrigued what his next step will be if it's not Detroit. Scotty, what is the playoff series, sir, that has you the most fascinated of the eight matchups that we know are going to be there in the first round?
Well, I mean, I look at, you know, Ottawa and Montreal, and the question, you know, obviously you've got Carey Price there, the best goalie in the world, and then you look and you say, how can Ottawa match up there? Can Hammond keep going? Can he play? Can he beat Carey Price? And, you know, 2 months ago, we all would have said, well, who is Hammond? And then we would have said, not a chance in hell. Until you look at his numbers and say, oh, my God, I mean, these are beyond gaudy on a what is not a great hockey team, but a team that played tremendous hockey down. So, I mean, that matchup there really intrigues me, and to see if Ottawa has any gas left in the tank after, you know, just having to work so hard to get there with no margin for error going right down to the last game of the season. Can they ramp it up one more time? Because they match up pretty well against that Montreal team, and that's a series that's winnable for them, and they won the season series, as a matter of fact. So that one's intriguing. And then you look at, I mean, they're all good matchups, but then there's other series where there's the potential for fallout with, you know, St. Louis and, again, a red-hot Minnesota team that cooled a little bit at the end but had a great run, obviously, to get there. And then you look at Anaheim as another team that another great regular season, but it's show-me time, and they're matching up against a Winnipeg team that is, you know, a pretty talented group that runs deep, is big and strong, and is that a good matchup for them? So, as I say, they're all good matchups. They're all intriguing in their own way, but those ones kind of jump out at me the most.
Let me throw a theory out at you here, Scotty. Are we looking at, in the Anaheim-Winnipeg series, if Anaheim bows out, if Winnipeg pulls off the upset, are we looking at a former Maple Leafs coach versus the next Maple Leafs coach?
Well, first, I would say this. I don't think there's any such thing as an upset anymore. And the margin between top and bottom in terms of playoff teams, points-wise, I think is the fewest that it's ever been. So that tells you how tight and close teams are. And that we've had 16 different cup champions, or we'll have 16 different cup champions, also tells you about how tight it is and how difficult it is. But yeah, I think if you're sitting in the chair with 109 points, you're still playing a team with 99 points. So you know they're a good team. So is it an upset? It's going to be a huge disappointment, that's for sure. I don't think you classify it as an upset, but it would be a huge disappointment. And then the question is, organizationally, how devastating is it? And do you hang it on your coach? And again, are we getting ahead of ourselves? It was interesting. I was watching the Shanahan press conference. So if you want to talk about the Leafs, and it was like, he said, he was asked the question, if a great coach became available, would you, and you didn't have a general manager in place, would you go out and hire said coach? And the answer was, you know, don't like dealing hypotheticals, but it's similar to his philosophy with respect to the general manager he brings in, is that you hope that that person will identify that the coach is very good and my management team is very good, and therefore you fit in well into that system to lead it. So I guess the answer is he would go down that road if he had to, and was quick to admit that this is not a philosophy and a formula that everybody embraces. He said there will be some people who wouldn't want to do it, but there will be some people who want to do it. So would he be the guy? I mean, I think we all agree it would be a great fit. And I think ultimately Bruce would be good in this market. But I don't know if he would resonate on Brendan's radar, or whether they're waiting to wait a little bit longer to see, again, who might pop up, because there could be a lot of fallout this spring.
Yeah, going back to that philosophy again with Brendan Shanahan, is that ultimately, and you guys talked about this on HC today, is that ultimately because regardless of who holds the title of general manager, this is Shanahan with two hands on the wheel?
Well, sure. I mean, he admitted that he's not going to be the general manager, but that he does have a lot of input into the day-to-day. So he's trying to sell it as a team concept. And so, yeah, I mean, he does have his two hands on the wheel, and he is looking at a formula that is much different than what a lot of other organizations would do, and he admits that, but he seems committed that he's building a strong team, and if you want to be the guy, then you better be a part of the team and embrace that kind of an arrangement. A lot of us say it's ass backwards, but he seems to think it's the right way to do it.
The Central Division fascinates me. I think top to bottom, that's the best group of four teams in the playoffs this year, What do you make out of the Blues and the Wild and the Blackhawks and the Predators in the first round?
Well, I mean, the Blues, it's I guess the goaltending is somewhat of a question mark, although, you know, Allen looks like he's the guy. And, you know, Minnesota, again, one of those teams that had to work so hard for so long to get there. Can they ramp it up one more time? And a lot at stake, it feels like, for that Blues organization after some disappointments in the postseason and feeling that they have to have a deep run. Otherwise, there's going to be change inflicted there. But again, you're a 109-point team against a 100-point team. How big an upset is it? But it will be a disappointment, no question about that. And, you know, Chicago-Nashville matchup is intriguing that it looks like Kane is at least available for the first game in that series, and what an incredible turnaround that is in terms of recovery from his broken clavicle that we all knew he was on the fast track, but that seems even faster than anybody had anticipated or even a week ago when he was skating and shooting and doing a lot of things at practice. So if he gets back, then clearly that adds an offensive dimension that's been lacking for that team, and they've struggled to score goals down the stretch. So that would be a huge boost, and they're matching up against a Nashville team that was awesome on home ice for a large part of the season, but has stumbled down the stretch and doesn't look like a team that's pointed in the right direction as they get into this postseason.
Yeah, I believe
they have a goalie who's a difference maker.
I believe Kane's recovery is because of all of his experience popping his collar as a young douchebag. but it's obviously popped right back into place. No, that's a good breakdown of it. And I hope that the Blues have the good sense of going with Allen first, because it very much reminds me of some other situations, the Detroit's in particular. If you've got this kid, in Detroit's case, Mrazek, and in the Blues' case, Allen, that is the swing for the fences goalie that could give you the shutouts you need, but maybe come back and give up three goals the next game. And then you have these steady Eddies and Brian Elliott and Jimmy Howard that you can rely on if the kid doesn't work out. So it would really, I mean, Hitchcock seemed on the fence about Elliott and Allen today, but I would really be questioning his logic if he didn't go with Allen first.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he doesn't go that way. And Babcock came out today and said that Mrazek was going to start. And, of course,
there you
put
go.
Him in that final game on Saturday against Carolina. So and was, you know, very candid about his appraisal of Jimmy Howard's work the game prior to that. So, I would be surprised, too, if Blues didn't go in that direction.
Last one from me, Scott. Your thoughts on the Yzerman Cup. Things would have been different last year with a healthier couple of players on the Tampa Bay Lightning squad. But here we have Yzerman's former team against his current team, Tampa and Detroit. What intrigues you, or how do you handicap this one?
Well, we just mentioned the goaltending. So what do you get from if you're Detroit? And it's been inconsistent for the last few months, so they have to get consistency. They need a hot goaltender, because you're going up against the highest scoring team in the league. And the big difference maker, and you wonder what it could have been like last spring, but you got Bishop back, 40 wins and a terrific goaltender. So, you know, right now you're going into that series in a better spot goaltending wise, and you've got a lot of offensive weapons, and, you know, your second line is almost as dangerous as your first line. So you've got a lot of firepower to throw at that Detroit team. But again, don't underestimate Babcock and what he's able to do with that group. But I just think Tampa, from the experience of last year, I mean, they got swept by Canadians, but that was a close sweep. And it was a series in which the goaltending really was the difference. Well, this year they've got the goaltender, so I could see them getting on a bit of a roll here, a bit of a run.
Great stuff, Scotty. That's all I got, sir. You have dropped the knowledge as expected, and we will watch you on the airwaves in the coming weeks, sir.
Well, Jeffy and
thanks,
I
Scotty.
Are doing a reprise of the iDesk, sort of. So
I know. It's kind of,
we're
I know.
Together but again this spring, so it's going to be a fun time and a good time, so looking forward to it.
You, me, and Billy Jaffe, Scotty, we'll see you on Wednesday.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
See you, pal.
Take care, Scotty. When people tell me what they miss most about CBC's Hockey Night coverage, they always say the iDesk, Ron McLean relentlessly harassing Alex Burrows, and that one suit jacket that has all of the – it's like white with the red flowers on it.
Oh, for grapes.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was inferred.
Fair enough. I'm sure he'll break that one up. I have a hard time believing anyone would miss the iDesk. You know why the iDesk was interesting? Well, first of all, it was on for like sometimes maybe as little as 15 seconds at a go. We used to, Scott and I by the end used to call it the why desk, as in why are we here? It got to a point where I used to play this online when I was Twitter virgin and people kind of got into it. Every day I would bring in a different piece of fruit and leave it on the desk and people would have to guess what piece of fruit was a banana or an orange or was bringing some grapes today or an apple to see what kind of fruit I would put on the desk. I don't think my exec Shirley Najak ever caught on to that or Joel Darling, but yeah.
So you had a little.
It was a pear, a watermelon sometimes. That's all it was. Yeah. You gotta do something, eh? Yeah. So that was my little Easter egg on the iDesk.
All right, listen, I'm going to give you my picks, and you tell me where I'm wrong. But no show tomorrow, by the way, I'm taking a day to hang out with the kid at the Liberty Science Center. I have Vivian for the week, and she is adorable and wonderful. But just between me and you, two dads, and all of us in the listening audience, all of our friends here, God damn it, this was the wrong week to have the kid. Holy shit.
The opening week of the Stanley Cup playoffs? What are you doing?
So much goddamn work to do. And listen, baby, I know you want to play Mario Party. Daddy wants to play Mario Party too, but we just have to write this preview about the Jet series.
Okay, here's the rule. here's the rule. If you're really serious about hockey, to everybody, okay, if you're really serious about hockey and you're really serious about the playoffs, don't have sex in September and October. So there's no chance your kid's going to be born in April or May. All right? So just tie it in a knot.
Well, listen.
You know, nail the knees together. Also, no sex in September and October.
But it doesn't matter because, like, the other thing that's happened this year for myself and for Josh Cooper and for Nick Kostanica is we all have weddings to attend during this mayhem. So Josh was out Saturday for decision night. And Nick's missed like a week because he's at his sister's wedding. And God bless them all. Just congratulations. Yeah. My situation, I don't know if I've mentioned this before or not. My best friend's getting married in Oklahoma City this June. I'm the best man. I couldn't be happier for him. Great girl. I'm happy to see my boy finally seal the deal. Everything's great. It is probably going to fall on game 7 of the Cup Final. It's like around June like 11th or 12th.
Oh, really?
I can't do it, man. I am locked and loaded. I wouldn't do it even if I was not best man. Like if I was just a guest, I mean, I love him to death. I probably wouldn't do it anyway. The thought would cross my mind a little bit more.
I think I'm trying to think. I think it was Deb Matichka who was working at the Score at the time as the Calgary reporter for the Flames in 2003. She booked her wedding into June, figuring the Calgary Flames weren't going to be in the Stanley Cup, and I think her wedding day fell on Game 7 of the Flames Tampa series.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Like I know we're fine. Like between Coop and Leahy and everybody, like we will have amazing coverage of whatever happens at that point of the season. Yeah. But I would love it if there was a thing where I could go cover like whatever the final game, and then hop a plane and go to fucking Tumbleweedville and go to this wedding and jeez. I'm really excited. And then
I'm anger here.
Well, it's just
still
Oklahoma.
You get this mad when you vote, Greg? you're upset about this.
It's real simple. Yeah. It's real simple. There's only like four teams that could possibly win the cup. So have your wedding in Chicago. Come on. Do me a solid.
All right, go, because I got a split in five. Do your picks.
Montreal.
What do you got?
Montreal, Ottawa. I am picking the upset here. I see the momentum carrying over. They just win games. It's ugly. It's fugly. It's not that great. They just win games. The Turris Stone connection's been great. Hammond, if he falters, I am more than comfortable seeing the ball fumble over to a guy who, I don't know, stops like 50 shots in the playoffs as a hobby. I like Ottawa in 6 over Montreal.
Okay.
No comment?
I would offer comment to all these things, but I got a punt in 5 minutes, so I don't have time to drill down on all of them. I see the Habs winning. I see the Habs, even without Max Pacioretty, if he's not available for the full series. I still think that the Carey Price factor is too much to overcome, and I'm still waiting for Andrew Hammond to fall apart. Thank you very much. So I'll take the Habs in that series.
Anybody, but you don't believe, even if he falls apart, it falls to Craig Anderson. It's not a bad safety net.
Yeah, some, don't you get that feeling something's going on with Anderson this year? I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's getting outplayed by a guy they throw hamburgers at. That's what's going on with him. Doesn't feel good about life right now.
Yeah.
All right. Save your comment for Wednesday when we'll probably do this again. Tampa Bay, Detroit. I am picking the Lightning in 5. Yzerman Cup goes to Yzerman. Lightning played well against Detroit this season. I like the triplets and Stamkos versus whatever Detroit throws at them. And I think the over-reliance of Detroit on its power play this season is going to come back to bite them on the ass, because guess what? They don't call penalties in the postseason. Lightning at 5.
All right. What about the Rangers and the Penguinos?
Rangers in 5. The Penguins are very lucky to be in these playoffs. Extraordinarily lucky to be in these playoffs. They're not.
You just want to see everyone fired in Pittsburgh. You just want to see a bloodletting in Pittsburgh. That's why.
I'm a man of reality here, and the reality is that without Chris Letang, this isn't a very good hockey team. And without Chris Letang, it's going to be very tough to beat a good Ranger team that can beat you several different ways, and especially with goaltending. So I like the Rangers in 5 in the series. Okay. Caps Islanders, the 7 of the last 9 Capitals series have gone 7 games. Now, granted, most of them have been against the Rangers. I understand that. But I see 7 games here, and I see the Caps winning. I think the Islanders win the last game played at Nassau Coliseum, and we'll skate around in a confetti shower of asbestos. But I think that the Capitals win the series in 7 games. What?
I want to go, but you want me to hold on until Wednesday, so that's fine. I'll just
button it
until Wednesday.
Blues and Wild. The Blues are my cup pick. Why the hell would I pick the Wild in the series? Blues and 7.
Because they're
hard
fucking good. Someone's got to be an upset somewhere along the way. You got to pick an upset. So I guess you picked Ottawa.
A lot of controversy. You got controversial players on both sides of the ice. I think it's going to be a real wild one. But I think in the end, Minnesota will be left feeling blue. St. Louis is 7. Provel
Chicago,
Pizza.
Nashville.
Greater than hashtag Juicy Lucy's. I pick the Blackhawks in 6. I think Pekka-Rene steals a game or two, even with Kane back. But the Blackhawks are too much for the Predators. So Hawks in 6.
It will be so interesting to see. I got to get in here. It will be so interesting to see Joel Quenneville with Pat Kane if he plays that first game. Because I'm sure it'll be like, well, we're just going to use him on the power play. Or we're going to manage his minutes. When you're a head coach and you have a superstar player who's sitting there and you want to throw him over the boards, but before the game you said, no, we got to make sure that he's okay, make sure he doesn't get overworked and all that. And the player sits there looking at you like, I'm okay to go. You watch. In for a penny, in for a pound. I can see Quenneville playing Pat Kane gingerly in the first period and then just like, all right, get out there, 88.
Yeah.
Like, take a regular shift in the second and third.
Every time a coach says he's going to manage somebody's minutes, the minutes manage to be above 20. So
Superstar, I know. 100%. 100%.
Over in Wacky Circus Music Division, the Pacific, I'll save the Ducks one for last. Canucks Flames. Right. I went back and forth in this one a lot. I think these are really two evenly matched teams. I was kind of leaning towards Vancouver with the veteran thing, but I think the Flames are just too young and dumb to realize they're supposed to lose in the first round. That plus goaltending gets them past the Canucks in 6 games. So I think the Flames in 6.
Okay, now the big one. Anaheim
continuing
and Winnipeg.
Continuing to defy the logic, by the way. They ain't going to get past the second round, but I think they can win a round. Ducks and Jets. Everybody and their mom, and my mom maybe too, is picking Winnipeg in this series. 1, because we all love Winnipeg. 2,
that's a great story.
Because we all know that a certain jolly gentleman behind the Ducks bench can't seem to win in the postseason. However.
Hey, by the way, aren't you the guy who always says I cheer for the best story?
Yeah, I do. Oh, the best story is Bruce Boudreau winning a cup. I mean, all due respect.
Well, that's, okay, that's true. Okay, granted. If Anaheim's not going to win the cup, isn't the best story Winnipeg winning here?
I think the best story is Winnipeg making the playoffs. It's an honor to be nominated. Listen, The Jets have three home games. They're probably going to win them all. The Ducks have four home games. It says here they win them all. Hmm. Ducks in seven. The unholy trinity of Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler proves too much. Again, listen, the thing that we all forget about this team is that you're dealing with two guys in Perry and Getzlaff that play their asses off in the postseason, and a guy in Kessler who, again, he may never be that player again, but do you remember that series he had against Nashville where it was like watching, he grabbed the star in Mario Brothers and just ran through the boards, killing everybody.
Yeah, I don't know if he's recovered from that, though. I remember it well. That was one of the great performances of the past few years in the playoffs. Oh, he was a man possessed. It was fantastic. I don't know don't you give your body like a dozen years to heal from that? He was a beast.
Him and Brendan Morrow during that run for the Dallas Stars a few years back, too. The two of the best individual performances in the playoffs. I can't even remember ever seeing. Briefly, because then I have to go. Yeah, Ducks in seven. I respect the hell out of Winnipeg and what they've done, and I think they're going to make it a hell of a series. At the end of the day, I trust Anaheim's goaltending a little bit more, and I trust their veteran players a little bit more. I trust their blue line a little bit more. And I think that the Ducks are going to win the series in seven. I know that bucks everybody's trend, and that should tell you something. If idiot pie in the face is picking a team and everyone else is picking the other team, mayhaps everyone else is right here. But that said, Ducks, Flames, Hawks, Blues, setting up Hawks and Blues.
Wow.
Get past those Hawks, ain't no Kings in the do it in Matthew McConaughey voice. Get past those Hawks, ain't no Kings in the final. Ottawa, Lightning, Rangers, Capitals, setting up what everybody wants to see in the second round, ladies and gentlemen. The Rangers and Capitals, round 15 billion.
Yeah, let's see it again. Everything's different this time around.
In case you haven't been able to tell, it all sets up quite nicely for a Lightning St. Louis Cup final.
Yeah, did you pick that? Is that yours?
That might have been what I've picked right now. I have the Blues are my pick, if you remember, before the season to win the Cup. Because I needed another tremendously disappointing Western Conference team after abandoning the Sharks, and I picked the Blues, and I will stick with the Blues. They're built to win. They just need Jake Allen to turn into Cam Ward and or Ken Dryden.
And or Patrick Waugh. Very good. All right, then. We have wrapped up. And on that, I'm going to make like a tree and leave. Make like a banana and split. What else do you do? What other cliches do we have here?
I don't know.
I don't got
make like
more.
A,
I
think make I like a midnight and run. There you go. There's one.
That's not bad.
Midnight Run on the Brain. It's my favorite movies. Thanks to everybody. We didn't get to the question of the day because it's only 45 minutes, and I really felt it was important to get to my picks rather than yours. So let's save.
Hang on to those for Wednesday.
Let's save those till Wednesday when we will do another show in preparation for the big-ass beginning of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks to producer Maddie. Thanks to Scott Morrison. Also, we'll do some draft stuff on Friday, too. Getting ready for the lottery on the weekend, because hot damn. All right,
okay.
go do your thing, Merrick. Bye. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you. Oh, also, check out your boy, me, Greg Wyshynski, on the latest edition of the BS Report with Bill Simmons, as Billy brings me back for the third time to spread the word of Puck to the people who usually listen to that podcast for basketball. We talked about the Bruins and the Kings. I know that's a huge surprise. But we also got around to talking about one of Bill's favorite subjects, which is his hatred of the Vancouver Canucks and whether or not the Sedins should go on the same plaque in the Hall of Fame. So do check it out. Thanks, everybody. Bye.